The next day I went 100% plant-based. And then literally within about 6-7 days, my energy levels skyrocketed. So I went from sleeping 12 hours a day and still being totally exhausted to back to sleeping 7-8 hours and waking up and able to do my workouts and go through my day without feeling like death.
Hello, and welcome to the Plant Prescription Podcast. This podcast is all about helping you live a longer, happier, and healthier life. We will be featuring conversations with great minds to inspire you to reach your ultimate potential. My name is Muzammil Ahmed. I'm a medical student with a master's in psychology, certification in nutrition, and a bachelor's in business.
And my name is Cass Warbeck. I'm a medical student with a bachelor of science in health and fitness physiology, and I'm also a plant-fueled Muay Thai fighter. We are both plant-based lifestyle advocates who are passionate about spreading positivity, optimizing health, and promoting sustainability.
Hey friends, before we introduce today's amazing guest, I wanted to share with you guys that I have started offering meal plans for anyone who is interested in transitioning to eating a more plant-based diet, or wanting to lose weight, or looking to build lean muscle. So please message me on my Instagram if you're interested. You can find my IG handle in the description section of this episode. So back to our guest. We have a very cool guest with us today, my friend Sam Mara, who wears many hats. He is an amazing actor based in Los Angeles who is currently pursuing master's in social work with a focus on psychotherapy. He is also an online fitness coach training clients around the world with customized workout programs they can do anytime, anywhere.
His journey towards a plant-based diet is a very interesting one. He's been diagnosed with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. His illness led him to pursue a whole food plant-based diet. He's been vegan for over 6 years now and can speak to the tremendous impact and benefits of a plant-based diet.
His story is a fascinating one, so we truly hope you guys enjoy and get lots out of it.
Hello, Sam. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. We're super excited to be sharing your story with our listeners. Would you like to just start off with a bit of an introduction of who you are?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on this. I really appreciate it. Good luck with the podcast. Good luck with med school. I know that's a lot. I don't envy you in the slightest, so wishing you all the best. Let's see. Well, a little bit about me. I mean, well, we could go all sorts of different places with that. I'm originally from Seattle, born and raised. I now live in Los Angeles, currently actor, model. I'm also pursuing my master's in social work, and I also do fitness coaching. So, yeah, that's a super short synopsis of who I am and what I do.
That's awesome.
A lot of cool things. Do you want to start off with your acting journey, like how that started and what have you done?
Sure, definitely. So I actually went to film school for my undergraduate degree. I don't know how you guys do university system in Canada, but for my undergraduate degree, I went to film school here in Los Angeles. And while I liked going to film school, by the last year or so, I realized it wasn't really for me. But at that point, it was too late to switch into something else. So I just finished my degree. I kind of worked in that industry, kind of doing random things in the film industry for years after that. Had a few other random jobs as well. And then I kind of got into acting by mistake. I grew up kind of doing acting stuff, doing like school plays and things like that, but it was never really anything that interested me in the long term. However, I got into it being in Los Angeles. There's, you know, actors and models everywhere. Kind of got into it by accident, took a few acting classes, and I really liked it. It just clicked and it kind of all spiraled downhill from there. So since then, I've been lucky to be in quite a few pretty cool projects. I got to work on Homecoming with Julia Roberts a couple years ago. I'm in Stumptown season one, if you want to check that out. And also made some appearances in Star Trek. Some other short film. I don't even remember what you could look me up and figure out what I've been in. And I don't even remember what I've been in at this point.
That's pretty cool.
That's so crazy. Yep. Do you have a favorite, like, I guess a favorite gig you've been in? Like if you had to pick one, like that really stands out in memory?
Oh, geez. Let's see. My favorite might've been, I did this short indie film. What was that last year that filmed in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, in the middle of summer. So it was extremely humid and hot and unbearable, but it was just a really cool script. It was a really cool character and everyone I got to work with was super awesome. Besides that, I don't know if I have another, I have a lot of weird stories and weird things that I've experienced, but, that might've been my favorite.
What was the name of that one then? If anyone wanted to check it out?
I believe it's currently making the, festival circuit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's called A Beautiful and Violent Place. I might be floating out there somewhere. If not, keep an eye out. If you're one of those nerds who likes going to film festivals, it's probably going to show up somewhere at some point.
So let's just step back. I'm curious to why you decided to get into acting and how that even happened before your undergrad.
Totally. Well, I think I did it kind of, you know, school plays, things like that, just because it was fun and I kind of enjoyed doing it. But I never really took it seriously or thought that this could be something later on down the road. I think the reason I went to film school was I really wasn't sure what I wanted to study or what I wanted to do with my life or what kind of career I wanted to have. But I always liked watching movies, always liked watching TV. So I'm like, all right, might as well go to school for this, I guess. And so I did that and I realized, okay, that aspect of the film industry didn't really interest me at all. And then, you know, after school had jobs in kind of random industries. I worked in, you know, the hospitality industry. Oh my gosh, what was I doing? I think I worked at, I blocked this all out of my memory, really. I was like walking dogs, doing pet sitting for a while. I worked at several different desk jobs doing random administrative secretarial tasks. And obviously none of these different venues really spoke to me. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, being in Los Angeles and just there's this aura of Hollywood, everyone's trying to be a star, whatever. It just can't help but I think rub off on you. And so took some acting classes just because, oh, this sounded like fun. At the time I was looking for new things to do because I wasn't really fulfilled with what I was doing career-wise. And so I was looking for new things to do. And, you know, being in Los Angeles, I'm like, well, people here take acting classes. Maybe I should do that. Maybe it'd be fun. So I did that and it just really clicked and I really liked it. And then kept going back, eventually started auditioning for little projects here and there for fun. And eventually got signed by an agent and manager and it just kind of all went to hell from there.
That's pretty cool. What do you like about acting the most?
I think it's the main thing I like about acting is that literally it's different every single day. One project is different from the next. And you are doing something different every day because you're filming a different part of the script. You're a different character for different projects. You get put in situations that I think no other job would ever put you in. And I mean that in a good way, in a funny way oftentimes. But like, for example, I remember this was a while ago now. We were filming this commercial for Chevy Volt. I don't know if I'm allowed to say brand names or not, but I just dropped it right there.
Okay.
We were filming this car commercial several years ago, and we, in order to save money, the production had us stay overnight. It was a commercial that filmed in Las Vegas and Los Angeles, so there's a lot of driving around. In order to save money, production had us stay overnight at one of their friends' house, which was this like weird cabin farm in the middle of nowhere, Central California. I still don't know where it was exactly. And the guy was a very interesting individual. While we were there, he like showed us his collection of guns. He bragged about like how he could kill anything. Super weird situation to be in, but I'm just, you know, and then I'm sleeping basically in this kind of glorified outhouse. And I think most people would be horrified by all this, but I remember thinking like, this is awesome, hilarious, and terrifying at the same time, because I don't know what other job I could possibly be doing where I'd be sleeping in some dude's outhouse who showed us his collection of rifles a minute ago. And I have no idea where I am. And if I disappeared right now, no one would know what happened.
I can't imagine how many stories you have like that, actually. Yeah. I can't think of any other job that would put you in that situation either.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about it, but if I sit down and think about it, there's been some, plenty of weird things happen in the film industry, guys.
That's okay. Really cool. I've actually not told this to many people, but a while back I took a acting course and it was like, I think 6 months long where we met a few times a week in the studio. And then, you know, you learn all the skills and then you had to do a play at the end. And honestly, it's been one of my favorite times. Like, it was so much fun learning and meeting other, you know, amateur actors and just like, you know, being part of the play. So if you do that for a living, like, I can't even imagine how cool that is.
That's awesome, man. Well, it sounds like you got a fallback plan if medical school falls.
Something to consider, right?
I guess, but my recommendation is stay in school. Definitely stay in school.
Yeah, right? That's what you tell kids. So you have a lot of other cool things as well that I want to touch base on. Like you mentioned, you have a master's in social work with a focus in psychotherapy. How did you get into that?
Yeah, that's what I'm currently working on, yeah.
Right, you're currently doing that. So how did you decide to do that?
Well, it kind of, I guess, oddly ties back into acting. Acting, as fun as it is and as much as I enjoy it, there's always a part of me that kind of felt like something was missing for years while I was doing this. You know, I got to be part of really cool projects, work with really cool people, seeing myself on TV, that's kind of cool. But
yeah,
I guess at the end of the day, I felt like there was something missing. Like at the end of the day, there was... it didn't really matter. Not, which isn't to say that, you know, entertainment and acting and the film industry doesn't provide something that a lot of people enjoy and get a lot of benefits from. But for me personally, I just felt like there was a lack of fulfillment in it. And so that kind of spawned a series of, I guess, musings on my half on like, okay, what else can I do besides acting that can find fulfillment is? Because the thing with the film industry is that it's very up and down as far as work. Mm-hmm. You know, there's sometimes where you are working insane hours for long periods of time, and sometimes when you have weeks, months off. And so a lot of people will tell you this, but people who work in the film industry, a lot of them have other things going on. You know, they might do other things in the film industry besides acting or besides producing, directing, and some of them do things in completely other industries. And so for me, I was like, okay, well, you know, acting naturally, I'm going to have these periods of downtime. I need to find something else to do that is enjoyable to me and is also fulfilling. And so I think, I'm not quite sure how I ended up in social work. I know psychotherapy is always something that interested me. And I think what finally was the catalyst or the thing that really convinced me to go after this master's degree was that working with a licensed clinical social worker, myself going to therapy, working through my own issues, was just incredibly beneficial and transformative in my own life. Mm-hmm. I began realizing that, hey, I can do this. I can do this as well. I think other people could benefit from this. And so, that's how that started.
Oh, that's super cool. Can't even imagine, like, you know, someone seeing you on TV and then they show up to talk to you and it's like my psychotherapist is an actor I saw on TV. Like, how cool is that?
I didn't even think about it. I mean, honestly, actors, artists is a population I'd like to work with one day.
Cool.
Yeah, because obviously I know a lot of the things that they go through. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to share, doesn't have to be personal, but would you like to share some of the things that you think you could help other actors that might be, like, what type of things they go through that, you know, you could play a role in?
Totally. Well, I think, I mean, most people who work in the entertainment industry or most actors and models are aware of this, but there is a lot of, shall we say, instability. Obviously, income can be all over the place because you're kind of job to job. You're basically freelance your whole life. And so there's a lot to grapple with that, what effect that has on your personal life, relationships, so on and so forth. And also there's a lot of issues with insecurity, self-esteem. You know, this is a, you know, business that, you know, it seems very personal at times, even if it may not be, it seems very personal at times. There's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of acceptance for seemingly no reason. And that's a lot to unpack sometimes. And so dealing with that is something I am acutely aware of, continue to deal. I mean, actors and anybody in the film industry deals with this their entire career, for the most part. Unless you're a superstar, A-list celebrity. Mm-hmm. But even then there's you know, insecurity and instability with that, trying to maintain that level of, right, of fame or success. And so it can be very brutal in that regard.
I can only imagine. You can never get complacent. Everything could just be like, could shift any second, I can imagine.
Totally, yeah. Which I think is both, I guess, cool and bad about this industry. It's cool because there's trends and anybody can kind of, you know, work the way up, and but also bad because, you know, anybody can just disappear or fall off the earth. I mean, think about how many actors we know that five, 10 years ago were super huge and big, and now we don't really see them.
Inherit them. Yeah, that's interesting. It's pretty cool that you bring that up, because I feel like as audience, we don't always think about that side of things. We only see the glamour, right? We only see the fame. We only see them on TV. And like you hear, you hear stories that about people going through their mental health issues, but it's just like there's an entire other side to it that you, as audience, you didn't get preview of.
Definitely.
And you, yeah, and you having been in that industry, you have that exposure, personal and through friends, I'm guessing, as well. So if you were to become a psychotherapist and work in that industry, I feel like it's like, you know, you could help those people more than anyone else can.
Oh, I would hope so. I would hope so. Crap, I was going to say something. I forget what it was. Clearly wasn't important. Edit that out.
We'll come back to it if you remember.
Yeah. So you're, you still have more, like you are a fitness coach online. So it's like, you know, you're a jack of all trades. So do you want to also touch base on that?
Yeah, I guess. So that's kind of the newer thing that I've added on, is working out and fitness has been something that's, I guess, been a part of my life since high school. It was, I don't know how I really got into it. I think it was just kind of by another thing that got into by accident. My dad had this old kind of rusty weight set in our basement and just kind of sat there and no one used it. And I remember one summer in high school, just kind of goofing around and started messing with the weights. And then I really liked it. And then it just kind of another thing that just spiraled out of control from there. So I started working out regularly. How I work out has changed over the years. And now what I do is, like you mentioned, I coach people online. So I train people online. I do customized workouts made just for them that they can do anywhere, anytime, specializing in bodyweight exercises. I personally haven't touched a weight or weight machine in, over 5 years now.
Cool.
Weights work, but you don't need them. Yeah. If you don't have them. So don't stress about it.
Right.
And then swimming. I'm an avid swimmer. I would swim every day if I could. Obviously with quarantine and COVID-19, my options as far as pools are quite limited now, but figured out a way to make it work. And
at least you got the body weight exercises. No one can take that away from people.
Yeah. No one can take it away from anybody. You could be in prison and still be doing body weight exercises.
It's true. I'm curious to ask, can you just give an overview of like what your fitness in a week would look like? Like how do you structure your workouts? You don't have to go into depth, but I'm just curious.
Well, oh yeah, totally. Well, I personally will, in a perfect week, which, you know, how often does this really happen? I'll just alternate strength days and then what I call cardio rest days. So strength training days will be the body weight exercises. And then the cardio rest days will be when I do swimming. So ideally it'd be about, I guess, three of those a week. So I have three strength training workouts per week and then three cardio rest days per week. Does that really happen in real life with everything going on? Probably not. But I think that's where, and I guess the point of this whole podcast, where nutrition and diet and all that comes into play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, such a huge role, and people undervalue it sometimes. And thank you for bringing some awareness to that, actually.
Yeah, definitely. You can't, it's quite true. You can't, out push up a bad diet or outwork a bad diet.
Outrun a bad diet.
Never, outswim a bad diet, whatever.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you mentioned nutrition. So what does your nutrition look like right now?
So right now I do, not that anyone has to do this, but I'm a big fan of intermittent fasting just because, I don't know, you guys being in the medical field, you might speak to this more than I can. Not necessarily for like the quote health benefits it may potentially provide, but just because for me, it's a natural way of controlling my calorie intake.
That's
So if I only eat two meals a day, it's much harder to overeat because I'm someone who likes eating. I like having big meals and enjoying big meals. And so if I were to structure my eating as in having three big meals a day and then like snacks in between, it'd be so easy for me to overdo it and gain a bunch of weight.
Yeah, it's an easy way to simplify things. And I think in today's day and age, a lot of people are kind of gravitating towards intermittent fasting. It works for a lot of people's lifestyles, and it's something it's black and white. You restrict your eating times and it's a lot simpler to follow. Like there's less decisions you have to make and it's a little more, it's less, I think decision fatigue is the word. Yeah. Where you're not faced with so many decisions throughout the day and you can just simplify and two meals a day and that's it.
Definitely. It works for me because I don't like working out with like a full stomach. And so I'll get my workout in the morning when I'm fasting, and then I'll break my fast later for lunchtime, and then I'll have dinner later. And so it's totally easy. It's intuitive. I don't have to think about it. Like you said, I just have two meals, two big enjoyable meals, and call it quits.
I think it's important to mention, which I know you would agree with, is that you do eat two big meals, but your meals aren't just like junk food. Like you eat very clean and very healthy. So
right.
It's like, yeah, just because you're doing intermittent fasting doesn't give you the right to then just go and eat whatever. Because I have seen a lot of fitness coaches online promote that, which is a bit dangerous for one's health.
Totally. And that kind of speaks to what we just said earlier. You can't outrun, outswim.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Push up a bad diet, no matter how you structure your eating, whether you're eating six meals a day or just one meal a day. And so, I mean, as much as anybody, I enjoy my treats and cheat meals every now and then. But yeah, I do try to eat as, you know, whole foods, plant-based. I mean, obviously all 100% plant-based, but as whole foods, nutritious, nutrient-dense foods as possible. Yeah.
Absolutely. So speaking of health, I feel like this is a good segue to you to share your personal journey towards, I believe you were diagnosed with Crohn's disease as well as ulcerative colitis. So would you like to just kind of open up the topic and how that happened? And yeah, let's go from there.
Totally. Okay. So this will be a pretty long story, but I'll try to keep
it
as direct as possible. Okay. So about 2013, 2014, seemingly out of nowhere, I started having health problems. They didn't seem anything too serious at the time. It was mainly gastrointestinal issues. And so I'm like, okay, that's weird. But as time progressed, they kept getting worse and worse and started affecting other parts of my body. So I started having a lot of skin issues. I was fatigued, tired all the time. I had started having joint pain. And at this point, I was like in my early 20s or mid 20s. So like a little too young to have massive joint pain and be tired all the time. And so that kind of kicked off a series of tons of different tests, medical tests I've had, been scoped both ends, had all these, had a CAT scan, x-rays, CT scans, MRIs done in my abdomen, had, I can't even tell you how many blood tests I've done, and everything checked out as being normal. There was nothing crazy. I was eventually diagnosed with having SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which... I mean, you guys are probably familiar with it. There seems to be, in my opinion, a lot of mixed literature out there about about what it all means and how to, quote, treat it. So was diagnosed with that. So they put me on different antibiotics. They didn't do anything. They put me on different diets that really didn't do anything. I've been on pretty much every medical diet I think that exists at some point or another. So I've done the low FODMAP diet, done the GAPS diet, did the SED diet, did the paleo diet. I did the DASH diet, which is for people with hypertension. That didn't do anything. And the paleo diet, I felt like I was going to die the whole time. And none of those made me feel better. Oftentimes they made me feel worse. And I was on each one for a good period of time, at least 4 or 5 months with all of them. And none of them worked. So none of the medication they gave me worked. None of the diets worked. And at this point I was having crazy skin issues, massive gastrointestinal issues, tired all the time. I remember I would, at this point in time, I didn't have a job that was super early in the morning. So when I went to bed at night, I'd go to bed at like 11 p.m. And just in case, I'd set my alarm for 11 a.m. And I would sleep all the way through completely uninterrupted. And that alarm would go off and like wake me up out of a deep sleep. So I'd sleep 12 hours completely uninterrupted. And I was still exhausted the entire day. So something was clearly wrong. And what's interesting is that while I was going through all this, an acting teacher I had at the time was a vegan. And I was aware of veganism, of course, but it always struck me as something that was completely absurd and ridiculous because human beings need meat and cheese to survive. Right, because that's what we're taught to believe. Right. So I remember being at his house one day, and I was like, kind of like leaned back on his couch, kind of feeling like I was about to die. And he was telling me about like vegan stuff, veganism, and how like, oh, maybe we should start trying doing vegan diet things or vegan meals, more plant based meals. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, sure, dude, yeah, whatever. That's utterly ridiculous. But yeah, thanks for the input. But I think that kind of planted a seed in my mind somewhere. So fast forward about a year of feeling like death and having none of these diet medications work. And I was desperate. And so the veganism, like a vegan diet, was like the one last thing I hadn't tried. And I felt so terrible. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to feel any worse, so I might as well try this. So I had I went through like a bender the night before. It was really gross. Had a bunch of pizza and chicken wings. Disgusting. And then the next day I went 100% plant-based. And then literally within about 6-7 days, my energy levels skyrocketed. So I went from sleeping 12 hours a day and still being totally exhausted to back to sleeping 7-8 hours and waking up and able to do my workouts and go through my day without feeling like death. So I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Took a lot longer for like the gastrointestinal and all the other issues to get better, but just having that initial response of my energy levels going up, I'm like, okay, well, there's something to this. I'm gonna stick with it. So I stuck with it, and after about a year, I would say I was pretty much over all my gastrointestinal issues. It was super, super weird. So I felt great for about, this gets into the second part of the whole journey. So I felt great about, and how I got diagnosed with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. So I felt great just being a normal vegan, 100% vegan, felt great for about 4 years. And then around summer of 2018, I started having gastrointestinal issues again.
Before we get into that, I'm just curious. So when you initially started, that first day you were like, I'm going to go plant-based. Mm-hmm. Was it mainly because of that friend of yours who had mentioned it, or did you actually look into it? Like, was it more of an experiment, or did you end up watching a documentary in the meantime and were convinced?
I think it was definitely an experiment. Yeah. And then doing research and watching documentaries to then like further convince myself to stick with it. Because when I first went plant-based, I totally told myself like, okay, once I start feeling better, I'm going to definitely start trying to reintroduce animal foods again. I'll start with something small like eggs, then she move into chicken, and then go back to being 100% omnivore like I was before. But so once I made that change and then feeling great, I'm like, right. Well, there's something to it. So then I looked up things like, oh, okay, why do I feel so good? What's going on here? Why is this veganism thing so awesome? And then that's when I found the documentaries that you guys are aware of, like Forks Over Knives,
right.
All those things, Earthlings. And then, yeah, the ethics and all that is what kept me in it. Because, yeah, once I started feeling great, what motivation would I have to stick with it if there weren't other things keeping me there? So that's actually a kind of a side point I have. Like a lot of people who go to a plant-based diet just for health alone, yeah, that's great. And I think, you know, a lot of people come to this lifestyle, this diet for a lot of different reasons. But if that's your only reason, then once you start feeling better, those are the people who often go back. Yeah, because they don't have other reasons to keep them in there, which is, you know, humanitarian reasons, ethical reasons, environmental reasons, all those kind of things.
It's interesting because my journey is similar to yours. Like I also had constant fatigue and a few other health issues. Mm-hmm. And I initially went plant-based strictly for health. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you because I used to say this to my mom. I said it to her on the phone and to my friends. I'm like, I'll still eat meat once in a while at events. Like I don't have any problem with that. And I feel like if I hadn't discovered the ethical side and the environmental side, I would have probably done the same thing as you were thinking as well.
Totally.
And I'm kind of glad that it's like a domino effect. You find out about one thing and then you just end up learning more and more about other things. And then if you're open to it, then you realize that, you know, if you don't need it for health purposes and clearly it's doing damage to the environment and you know, there's other beings suffering, then you end up just sticking to it 100%.
Totally. That's a good point you make about the domino effect. I think that's definitely what happens with people who have been vegan for a long time. They come to it for one major reason, and then the other reasons start popping up and they can't ignore them.
Yeah.
I just want to highlight one thing that you mentioned before. You said you'd tried a lot of other diets, like you'd been on the FODMAP diet and a DASH diet. And I just want to point out that a lot of people consider the DASH diet to be a predominantly, like it's plant-heavy diet. But it's interesting that you didn't notice much of a difference with the DASH diet or even like the paleo diet, because there's a lot of vegetables and plant foods in the paleo diet as well. So I find it interesting that it wasn't until you went 100% whole food plant-based that you actually noticed a significant change in your symptoms and how you were feeling?
Yeah, I think, I mean, with all those diets, there's still animal products involved, obviously to varying degrees. But I think that was obviously the common denominator in all of them. Yeah. So eating large amounts of animal products, and I didn't have enough nutrient-dense carbohydrates, whole foods that I was taking in order to not make me feel terrible.
Right. I think I just want to highlight here that paleo diet, people, and you know, Sam, you've done it, and I have done it too myself in the past. Paleo diet still has a lot of meat in it. Like when I was doing paleo diet, I had meat in every plate. So I don't think it's that plant enriched as it as people think it is. And when it comes to DASH diet has a lot of, I guess, flexibility in, so people end up eating more meat anyway when they're doing DASH diet. And then another point is if someone has intestinal, you know, damage because of their Crohn's disease and also ulcerative colitis, then at that point they may need to go to a, you know, to an extent that their body can fully heal, and maybe just like reducing might not be enough. That's just what I've read from my reading and
I just think it's a very good example of how someone might need to go 100% plant-based to notice a difference in their symptoms. Whereas some people, they'll dabble in a couple diets here and there and then just assume that diet won't make much of a difference and they kind of give up. Yeah. Whereas this is basically showing that like it can make a difference. You just have to be a little more extreme with it.
Or it might be individualistic. Like, you know, for certain people, maybe if they were to do 90% plant-based and
that is true,
show good results. Whereas for others, it might be a bit more required. Because I know there was because my research last summer was in Crohn's disease. That's what I did the last four months of last summer. And I remember coming across one 2010 study in World Journal of Gastroenterology, and they had compared omnivorous diet with a semi-vegetarian diet. But the semi-vegetarian diet is pretty much plant-based because they only allow less than half a serving of meat, or around half a serving of meat a week, not a day, a week. So that is so little meat that I feel like your body's still getting so many plants that tiny, tiny serving may not be enough to do enough damage. And it's interesting because by the end of 2 years, 75% of people eating omnivorous diet relapsed, and only 25% remained in remission. Whereas in first year, 100% of people eating plant-based stayed in remission. And by the end of second year, only 8% relapsed, and 92% still remained in remission. Like the drastic comparison, you know, omnivorous diet to plant-based diet, like only 25% remained in remission end of second year for omnivorous diet versus 92%. And the study had concluded that to date, this has been the best result in relapse prevention they have found thus far, better than any drugs.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I've seen that study. And it's incredibly valuable. And it shows a lot about the amazing impact a plant-based diet can have.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I believe that exact study is detailed beautifully in one of Dr. Greger's nutritionfacts.org videos. So perhaps we can link to that in the show notes if anyone wants to watch it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that might have been how I came across it in the first place. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. But let's get back into your story. It was interesting. So
So yeah, I had adopted the plant-based diet and I felt great for 4 years, just by being a normal vegan, eating a vegan diet. And then around summer 2018, started having gastrointestinal issues again, kind of out of nowhere, it seemed. I didn't think too much about it because I'm like, oh, well, I've dealt with this in the past. Oh, just keep eating a vegan diet. It'll eventually sort itself out. But it kept getting worse and worse, to the point where I started passing blood. And eventually I had like, all right, I got to go to the doctor, see what's going on. They thought it was a bacterial infection, so they gave me a course of antibiotics, Cipro and Flagyl, which I'm sure you guys are aware of, which I ended up having an allergic reaction to both of those antibiotics, and that is what finally put me in the hospital for about a week. So I was, at this point, I was going to the bathroom 20, 25 times a day, passing nothing but water and blood. I think I have photos, I think, on my Instagram floating out, but I ended up losing close to 30 pounds, didn't end up eating for like 2 weeks. When I finally got out of the hospital, then I had like 30 pounds that I'd lost and had to sort of start over and reassess, okay, what happened? What went wrong? So a lot of people might look at that, and that's when I was diagnosed with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, is when I was in the hospital, losing all that weight, feeling terrible. That's when they find out diagnosing with Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. Different doctors will tell you different things as to which one I have. It's either Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, maybe both if I'm that lucky. And so that's where I got diagnosed. Once I got released from the hospital, at this point I'd lost so much weight just walking up a flight of stairs. I was super winded. And so I was taking stock of like, okay, what went wrong? And a lot of people might look at this incident and be like, oh, well, that's proof that a vegan diet doesn't work. I mean, look what happened, you know, end up in the hospital, you lost all that weight. And no, that's not at all what happened. Because looking back at what was going on at that point in my life, yes, I was still vegan, but I was not eating very good foods. I was enjoying vegan desserts all the time. I was getting vegan fast food, vegan burgers, vegan pizza. As you guys know, there's vegan versions of everything now.
Everything, yeah.
So you can be 100% vegan and be completely unhealthy, which is what I was doing. So I was eating garbage. I was super stressed out with the job I had at the time, and I wasn't sleeping. So I don't care who you are, what you eat. If you're just eating junk, you're super stressed out all the time, and you're not sleeping, and then you have this predisposition for an autoimmune disease, then you're going to have health problems regardless of whether you're vegan or not.
Yeah.
And so finally got out of the hospital. I'm like, okay, let me do this for real, like how I did in the past. So started eating whole food, plant-based diet, and the strength started to come back. The bowel issues started to sort themselves out. They wanted to put me on biologics like Humira, Remicade. For those of you who have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, I'm sure you're all aware of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, not there's anything inherently wrong with those drugs, I decided I'm going to hold off on that and let's see if I can do this myself. And so went back to the whole foods, plant-based diet. Eating fruits and vegetables. Fruits and vegetables are good for you. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Great surprise, right? And then, yeah, the strength started to come back. The energy level started to come back. I started to put the weight back on. And now I feel like I'm stronger now than I was before that. I'm definitely can do more in the gym than I did before that. I'm swimming further than I did before that. And so, yeah, it really speaks to the power of diet. And so really all I take now, I take a series of like supplements and vitamins, but I'm not on any crazy immunosuppressant drugs. There's no biologics, no crazy prescriptions. Yeah.
That's super cool. And it honestly makes so much sense because before that relapse you had, you were eating a whole food plant-based diet for a while. And then afterwards too, and all the research that has shown plant-based eating to work for these diseases, all say that it's due to high fiber. It's due to fruits and vegetables. Right? Like that's the associations these studies have found. So when you are eating a high fiber diet, like fiber plays a vital role in maintaining intestinal barrier. And in Crohn's disease, like that intestinal barrier is what's impaired. So if you switch from a high fiber healthy diet to a vegan junk food diet, or you may not fully switch to it, but if you're eating a lot of it, you might not be eating meat, but you are putting your intestinal barrier, you know, in risk. So this completely makes sense, goes along with what the studies have found as well.
I didn't know that about fiber and Crohn's, but yeah, that makes 100% sense because, I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. We tend to sort of, I feel like today's day and age, there's so much out there in terms of like diet and what you should eat and not eat, when to eat it, what to eat it with. But at the end of the day, like I just said, fruits and vegetables are good for you.
Absolutely.
It's not that big of a mystery, guys.
So yeah, I just want to throw in another study that's very cool that we could throw in our show notes. There was a 2013 study done in Cell Immunology Journal. It's titled Crohn's Disease, a Review of Treatment Options and Current Research. And they discussed that there is no known cure for Crohn's disease, which I'm pretty sure you know as well. And current research so far focuses on just controlling symptoms through medication.
Mm-hmm.
However, they said that the best we have so far is a more plant-based diet, as that's been shown to be best, to have best result in relapse prevention. Oh, so wow. Studies are showing this, and it's a little sad that we don't get taught this in medical school, because in medical school, it's all about how to treat the symptoms for the most part. And the research is out there. You have seen results. I know some, another friend of mine has seen results as well. And my summer research also involved the pediatric population. And we had looked into what they ate and the association between their eating in the past year versus their relapse rate. And what we had found was that, okay, the sad thing is that all these kids come in with a bad diet to begin with. Like none of these kids come in eating a whole food plant-based diet, because those ones are the ones probably preventing it to begin with. But most of these kids had a poor diet. But what we found was that the ones that were eating a more Mediterranean-style diet, Mediterranean-style is still considered a plant-based diet because it's supposed to be mostly plants. They are the only ones who had better relapse prevention. And it was also interesting that there were other kids who were eating a similar diet to Mediterranean diet, but the major difference between the two were that the ones who were eating the fully Mediterranean diet, they were consuming low fat dairy versus the other group who was eating high fat dairy, but both of them were eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and legumes and stuff. Like they were eating more Mediterranean. And the ones who were eating a high fat dairy, like who had high fat dairy in their diet, they're the ones who did not significantly see relapse prevention.
Wow.
Which also goes along with what I've read in studies that meat isn't just the only thing. High fats also is a huge problem for Crohn's disease. It interrupts. Yeah, it damages your gut, gut microbiome, which is key. Like your gut bacteria is key for so many factors, and fiber and fruits and vegetables is what that gut bacteria needs. So it's really cool that that was my research, and then you can relate my research to your personal story and we can put it all together.
Doing what I can, man, doing what I can. quick side note, I forgot to mention it. Is that, so yeah, when I was in the hospital, they finally diagnosed me with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. That's when I realized like, oh, those things I dealt with years before when I had all those weird stomach issues that didn't really have an explanation, but got better with a vegan diet. That was a flare up of my Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. And just for whatever reason, it got missed by the diagnostic tools at the time. And so when I went through that plant-based diet and felt great for 4 years until I had that flare up again, that put me in the hospital. If anything, that speaks to the power of a vegan diet, because a vegan diet alone, I wasn't taking any medication, a vegan diet alone, quote, put me in remission, end quote, for 4 years, just by diet alone. Yeah.
So since you had that incident in the hospital, I think it was in 2018, you said, have you had a relapse since, or have you been in remission since then?
I'm actually probably due for another colonoscopy, but no, I haven't had any kind of relapse or issue since then. Am I guess, what is the word, diagnostic, what the official term to be in remission by, and the only way to tell that is by getting a colonoscopy. I haven't had one since then. I'm due for one, but I haven't had any sort of symptoms, anything like that.
That's amazing.
That's really cool. I just wish we used diet as a treatment modality more often than we do right now.
Well, right. Hopefully. Well,
it's tough. I mean, you guys know it's tough to get people to make changes in their life, especially for something like diet, because so much of our traditions and social things revolve around food, right? And you know, like with a lot of things that people have strong feelings about, when you challenge what they believe on it, a lot of people react defensively. And
So how has that impacted you in your personal life, like going vegan, going plant-based with your family in your personal life? Like, I feel like we kind of skipped that part where you decided to transition.
Right, totally. I think a lot of vegans can speak to this. There was plenty of raised eyebrows when I first did it, and a lot of people questioning it. And I think dealing with a lot of stupid, snarky, uneducated remarks as well. But I mean, I'm lucky now. I guess I'm one of the few lucky people that my family's completely accommodated to it. Nobody else in my family is a vegan, but they understand what I'm doing and why I eat what I eat and don't eat what I don't eat. And so they're very understanding. The sort of stupid, snarky comments on that on their front have faded away. Right. And yeah, in terms of, you know, the world is evolving so quickly in terms of going out and being a normal person and having a social life as a vegan. I know, I guess different vegans have different opinions about hanging out with non-vegans, but I can go to a restaurant pretty much anywhere and find something that's vegan.
Or you can just get the chef to help you out and make something vegan, even if it's not on the menu.
Totally. I guess I'm lucky to be in LA, which is, right. It's a big city. So there's a lot of options, but you know, like I said earlier, I was in Kansas last year in the middle of nowhere and I was still 100% vegan. In fact, I found a sandwich place that had tempeh on the menu. So I'm like, yeah, I was like, what? Super you're good cool. to go.
I love tempeh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, okay. What about your professional life? Like, have you, like, you know, with acting, have you encountered anyone saying anything about veganism? Are you eating plant-based? Have you encountered anything like that? Or has that been just like kept on the side?
I think, well, in the film industry, a lot of, if you work in the film industry, a lot of meals are catered or provided by the production company. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe it's just an LA thing or maybe it's a 21st century thing. I think there's so many different diets out there that people are doing that, like I said earlier, the catering always provides something that I can make or put together. And on smaller productions, when it's much more individualized, again, people are very accommodating. If anything now, which I think is a good thing, as opposed to, I guess, what, maybe 20, 30 years ago, when the topic of veganism comes up, from non-vegans, there seems to be much more curiosity and legitimate questions about it as opposed to snarkiness and immediately dismissing the whole thing, which I think is great in starting dialogues and getting people to eat more plants and less meat.
Yeah, no, 100%. There's less and less reasons to stick to a traditional diet now and more reasons to go plant-based. It's easier than it's ever been before, to be honest. I remember when I first transitioned, like say 6 years ago, and it was a struggle. Every restaurant, like I was modifying things, I'd have to put things together. And now, like you mentioned, you can literally walk in any restaurant and there's some places even have a whole separate vegan menu or a vegan section. And it's really been amazing to see the change in the world, actually.
Yeah, it's going totally mainstream. I mean, you see like places like Carl's Jr. McDonald's, well, I don't know about McDonald's, but Burger King providing like Impossible Patty now. You know, pizza places having vegan cheese now.
Right.
I think even Tyson Farms is working on a plant-based protein. And so, yeah, it's totally getting mainstream. And, you know, another point about people, you know, when you start talking about veganism, a lot of people will make comments about like, oh, well, you know, I stopped eating so much red meat or I'm doing meatless Mondays. And I think for a lot of vegans, and I've been guilty about this myself, internally we kind of roll our eyes because like, oh yeah, you're really making that big a difference not eating at McDonald's once, you know, every week or so. But if anything, we should, I think, encourage and prop those people up and point out what great changes they're making because we got to start somewhere, right?
I agree with you. If someone's willing to do it once a week, if you just inspire them, they might be willing to do it two times a week and that might eventually become five times, six times, or even like 100%. So I totally agree with you. I know what you mean because when you hear it, your initial thought is cool, but you know, there's like the other 6 days. But it's like seeing the big picture and realizing that any step forward is better than none. So totally. We should keep inspiring others to keep making those changes and to be to look at things positively because we are seeing changes, which has been amazing.
I was just going to say, I think it just comes down to the more plants on the plate, on your plate, the better. And it doesn't matter how you're getting them, how often, or it does matter how often, but you don't have to overly stress about it and just like choose plants when possible.
I agree. And I think it's just enhancing connection and awareness. I think for many years, a lot of us were disconnected from what we were doing or what we were eating, and we weren't even really aware of it. I mean, before I went through this journey, I didn't really think about what I ate and where it came from or how it got to my plate. I just ate it because either traditionally I ate it growing up or like I've heard it was good for you or that you should eat it or whatever, or tasted good. I didn't really think about the long-term effects of, oh, what am I eating and why am I eating it and what effect is this having not only on me, but on the planet as a whole.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just lost my train of thought here. I was just going to say how I just want to bring back the point where you guys were discussing how easy it is now to be vegan. Because someone who might want to do it, they may still see a big, like a big hill to cross. And mm-hmm. I can empathize because although I've only been vegan for, I believe, a bit over a year, I was plant-based longer, but like fully vegan for a bit over a year. Mm-hmm. Initially, it's still very overwhelming when you go out. And I can empathize with that. I don't want to take that away from people because when you do go out, like I remember going to my first restaurant the day after I decided to go vegan. It was for someone's going away party. And the menu itself had nothing vegan on it except for a small soup. And at that time, I neither had the confidence to be like, oh, can chef change this and make me this? Or just to have that discussion with the server. I just ordered that soup and a bland salad because none of their, because all their salads do had some sort of meat or egg on it. Mm-hmm. So initially I didn't have the confidence. I didn't have the knowledge and I barely ate that night and I came home and I had a proper dinner and I was feeling very sad. But over time I learned that, you know, chefs are very accommodating and you can put different things together and make something. So I just want to empathize with those people who may feel that, you know, it's not as easy as we're making it seem like, because in the beginning it might not be, but once you learn the tricks and once you realize that, I believe now every restaurant I've been to, they have been able to accommodate me and I've had no issue whatsoever, that it does get easier. You just need to learn those tricks.
Totally. And I've been, like you said, you travel a lot. I've been to quite a few places. I've yet to go to a place where I literally cannot get anything. And like we talked about with, you know, enhancing awareness and knowledge, is that people are much more aware now. So almost even unprompted, like I forget where I was, but the other day I was ordering something and asked, hey, can you make it without cheese, without egg? And the person just knew like, oh, well, the sauce already has cheese in it. So just so you know. So I wouldn't even think to ask about that. But just people are aware like, oh, yeah, there's people out there who don't eat any animal products. And so we need to be aware of that. And so, yeah, the chef, I think, even put something special together. So people are, it's, I mean, I guess 20, 30 years ago, that wouldn't have happened because people would have just been like, wait, well, I don't understand. Why do you want this without cheese? But it's supposed to come with the cheese. Right. We don't get it.
It still happens once in a while. It happened in Houston. Last time I was here, I was at a restaurant and I think something had egg on it and it was a breakfast item. And I asked them, I'm like, are you able to make this vegan? And she was like, yeah, I can just replace the egg with bacon.
Also, that's a new one.
I found that very interesting because I don't think she even realized what she said, or maybe she just never understood what vegan truly meant. But then I had to explain what it meant, and she was eventually able to totally like help me out. She was very nice about it, but it still happens once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, like I was just in Houston, and that's where it happened. We were at a Mexican restaurant. Eventually, just got. What was it, like a bean burrito, but make anything work wherever, but I guess certain places in the world are far more animal product heavy than other places in the world,
right?
But even then, we're look at like we just said, we can able to make it work no matter where we are.
Okay, super cool. So we have three questions for every guest before they leave.
Cool.
The first one is, what is your favorite plant-based meal?
Myself or like when I'm out and about?
It can be anything.
Anything.
Oh, geez. It honestly depends how I feel. I really like pasta. So anything with like pasta or noodles, regardless of what kind of sauce or what kind of style or what like ethnic origin it has, if there's noodles in it, that's amazing. I love it. So yeah, in any kind of noodles, like traditional Italian style noodles, or it could be like the lentil pastas now, Asian style noodles, doesn't really matter.
Right. Yeah. I love pastas. I just made one yesterday. So
I hear you, man.
Yeah.
All right. That leads us to our second question here. So what is one kitchen item you wouldn't be able to live without?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, I could be lame here and just say obvious stuff like, well, you need a knife, obviously, to cut things.
Something more personal to you.
Right. Let's see. Oh, quick side note. You mentioned about, you know, when you first go vegan and the difficulties it is. I don't know if you guys have seen that meme out there where it says, when you first go vegan and you have no idea what you're doing, and it's a picture of a guy cutting a tomato with a hairbrush. So, yeah, we get it. It can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
But like we said, you can make it work wherever. And the easiest way to do it is, honestly, take what you normally eat already for breakfast, lunch, or whatever, and just make that vegan. Right. So if you have cereal in the morning, get almond milk instead of cow's milk and find a cereal that doesn't have, milk in it. There, right. Perfect. That easy.
It's super easy. You can just Google these days. You can be like,
totally,
vegan meatballs or vegan whatever, and you will find thousands of recipes online if you don't know how to do it yourself.
100%, definitely. But let's see. Okay, kitchen item I can't live without that isn't super lame. this is super funny. I'm not super funny. I guess if you have Asian heritage, this isn't out of the norm. But for a lot of people, it's kind of weird. I will cook most of my food with chopsticks. So I won't use like spatulas or whatever, just because, well, chopsticks, like, because I don't know, there's something about it, the maneuverability and versatility of it. Like, I can cook anything with it. It's my preferred way of cooking things is with chopsticks. try it next time. You'll see what I'm talking about.
I'm going to have to try it tonight.
I feel like I'm going to struggle, but I'll try it and I'll send you a picture.
Especially if any kind of like stir fry or something you need to mix together, it like works perfectly for whatever reason.
That's genius.
I don't think I thought about doing that before. That's super cool. Okay. If you could leave one advice for our listeners, what would it be?
Or if there's anything we haven't touched on that you want to like put out on the table, now's your chance.
See, is there anything we haven't really talked about? Is there anything you guys in particular want me to mention or say that like other people haven't said?
No. Just a final piece of advice would be great.
Yeah.
For vegans or non-vegans?
Whatever, both. Up to you. Really
up. Okay. Well, I guess my one piece of advice is, you know, for a lot of people out there with, if you're dealing with any kind of health issue or you're curious about veganism and you're not, just try it. Like we talked about, it's easier now than it ever was before. And if you need to start small, just doing, you know, what, one meal a week without animal products, try that, or then move to one day a week and then, you know, 5 days a week, just start small. Anything you can do to not only help yourself, but help the planet, help the animals, help your fellow human beings, would be going to amazing steps. And for all you vegans out there, just keep doing what you're doing. You guys are awesome.
I love it.
I love that because, like using diet, right? You know, because especially it's relevant to you, using diet as a treatment is like, like if you're using a healthy plant-based whole food diet, it doesn't come with any side effects. So why not just try it? Like what's holding you back from trying it? Just try it. If it doesn't work, I'll be surprised. But if it doesn't work, then at least you tried it. Like, you know, medications, although they save lives and they're great, but they come with a lot of side effects.
Right.
Whereas trying whole food plant-based diet to see if it works for you, just do it. Like, you know, what are the side effects?
You really have nothing to lose by adopting a vegan diet other than you ate more fruits and vegetables. That's literally the worst thing that will happen to you. So why not give it a shot?
Why not? Right. Yeah, I agree with you.
All right. Well, if any of our listeners would like to reach out and connect with you, where can they find you?
Let's see. Well, not to sound kind of conceited or anything, but if you Google my name, Sam Mara, M-A-R-A, things will pop, like my Instagram will pop up, my IMDb will pop up. I think my website will pop up. Hit me up on any of those. Instagram, I'm pretty responsive. IMDb, I don't really check. I don't think there's a way to, they got rid of, IMDb used to have forums and you could talk about things. I think they got rid of those. Okay. But yeah, my website's up there. My Instagram's up there if you are interested in anything with veganism, acting stuff, fitness coaching, reach out to me and let's make it happen.
Yeah. We'll put your information in our show notes so people can reach out to you.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on here. Like this was an amazing conversation. I learned a lot about acting from you as well as your Crohn's disease journey, your veganism journey. So thank you so much for being on here and we really appreciate you.
And thank you guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And good luck with this podcast. It's a great idea. And I'm glad you guys are kind of paving the way in the medical field for this because, as you know, there's still not a whole lot out there in terms of in the medical field in terms of a plant-based diet. It's getting better, but we need people like yourselves to keep that that message going.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the Plant Prescription Podcast. We really hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully this inspires you to take steps towards making changes so you live a longer, happier, and healthier life.
You can also follow us on Instagram, where we share nutrition, health, and fitness content, along with recipes. Our Instagram handles can be found in the description of this episode. Please make sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any upcoming episodes. If you enjoyed this, we would love it if you left us a positive review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Please also make sure to share this with any family or friends who may benefit. Thank you so much for listening.
Also, be sure to eat plenty of plants and see you next week.